Welcome to the 2023 4th of July in the Virtual Park special event held by the Los Angeles Intergroup of Overeaters Anonymous. For information about OA, a list of our virtual and in-person meetings, or to support the LA Intergroup and these vital podcasts, please go to oalaig.org. For Seventh Tradition donations, click on Make a Donation under the Our Intergroup tab. The opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the individual speakers and not of OA as a whole. And now, our speakers.
Good morning. I'm excited to be here. My name is Darius. I am a compulsive overeater. And for those who celebrate, happy 4th of July. It's good to be away from work for a few days, and to, especially for me today. Some reason I thought this talk was yesterday. I went hiking. I came back at like 1 o'clock, and I was like, oh my God, I missed it, you know. But like Mark didn't text me, so I guess, and I was like, it's tomorrow. And so I made sure that I was up early and prepared. And I'm really grateful to be here. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I got to OA by the way of a different program, the money program. And when I looked at my compulsive eating, like in Debtors Anonymous, you look at your numbers and you log your money you spend every day. And I was looking and doing my numbers, and I saw how often I was in fast food places and making odd trips to 7-Eleven at odd hours, and you know, I was like, wow, I've spent hundreds of dollars on junk food and fast food. And the thing about this, I guess the dis-ease, if you want to call it, or the process addiction, that's a better way to say it, the process addiction, the compulsive overeating, is I just had this blindness to it, trying to keep I'll just say I ate a lot of sugar. And I used to say to myself, you know, I was like, at the time I was in my early 40s, and I was like, what 40-year-old man goes to the CVS and just buys and eats candy? I don't know anybody that does that but me, right? And I started to get these clues, right? Like something's not right here. And then I was like, who eats this stuff anyways, right? If you read you do. Chris S. I do. Thank you, Chris. But that was just always a thing, right? You know, what it was like, you know, sugar and sweets were the thing that kind of calmed the storms of my childhood. You know, I grew up in an environment that was dysfunctional. I don't even think it's the right word. It's too mild. You know, I grew up in amidst a lot of domestic violence. I had parents that were wounded. I'll just say that. My parents were really wounded, both of them. And their parents were wounded. And obviously their parents were wounded. And, you know, I experienced, excessive developmental trauma. You know, I was abused pre-verbally, matter of fact. And, you know, I think one of the biggest lights went out for me, I think I was 4 or 5 years old, where the candle blew out and I was just in a disassociation for many, many, many years, you know, decades and decades of my life. Right. And I was fortunate enough to be pulled out a lot. And I remember she would make extra batter and then leave like a fourth of it in the bowl and give me the bowl and the spoon. Right. And I would just sit there. You know, I was a little kid. So, you know, food had always been a ways and means to kind of numb, kind of medicate. And that started as a child. And I used to really be ashamed about being an overweight kid. And I grew up in the 1970s. So, you know, me being and I thought, you know, everybody said, oh, he'll grow out of it, he'll grow out of it. But I was just eating everything all the time. It's just eat, 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 eat. And I didn't, you know, I didn't know that's the way I was dealing with the trauma I experienced. I had no idea. But I remember when my first time it was, I felt the shame and embarrassment, and we were shopping for clothes. And my grandmother said, "Where's the husky size for him?" And I was just, I felt mortified. You know, I just turned red and I got hot because it was, yeah, I had to wear bigger clothes. And that was just that, you know, I accepted it. And as I got older, into high school, I started playing sports, you know, all of the quote unquote baby fat fell off, right? And I think I was so active, my eating habits didn't change very much, but I was so active, it did not make a difference to me. I guess where I'm going with this is the kind of the lies, but I thought everything that I did.
Darius, sorry to interrupt, but you've cut out a couple times. Is it possible to just turn off your video? That might give you a streaming a little bit better.
Sure. Is that okay? Great. I just had this on awareness, and maybe some of you can relate to that. And as I got into my 20s, I was, you know, full blown addiction, but food was part of that addiction as well. And I just remember like dating and you know, hanging out with friends. I would always try to kind of control where we were going, because I wanted to go out to where they had all of the stuff I loved. And that just continued. And I still had this unawareness to it. The strangest thing, you know. But when I got into my mid-20s, after I got sober, I was 27 years old, and I got into this thing where I want to take better care of myself. And I got into working out, lifting weights, bodybuilding. And that's where things really got weird, because I became a exercise bulimic, where I would be in tremendous shape. And then I would go on a bender of eating for 6 months and gain 30, 40, maybe 50 pounds. Then I would purge with exercise and weightlifting for months. And I was just up and down on the seesaw. You know, I was into fat burners, supplements. I was doing the crazy stuff like eating my body weight and protein every day, chicken breast and all these whey protein shakes. And I had no, absolutely zero clue to what I was doing to my body. With, you know, not only did my stress level, cortisol level exploded through the ceiling, but I damaged my adrenal glands, and, you know, just the stress of life itself was just very, very damaging. And so, you know, how this all manifested itself some years later was with disease set in, right? Dis-ease, D-I-S-EASE in my body, a serious autoimmune diagnosis. And that was like the alarm call, you know, and it sounded just as crazy as me walking into an AA meeting and them saying, yeah, your days of drinking are over. That sounded nuts to me as well. And I didn't listen to this doctor. And I just continued to do what I was doing. But what I didn't know, when I didn't clearly see, is that I, everything that triggered me, right? That could be a not such a great day at work. Anything and everything that triggered me, I went to food. And it's so unconscious. It's such a split second thing where it's just automatic, you know, it's like, and you're off. And it, you know, for me, the process of making that split second decision was way more powerful than any drug I did, alcohol, etc. And that, when I started to notice that, that's what really startled me. But it was out of my control, and I didn't have, you know, I tried to do OA upon this diagnosis. When I was, at the time, I was living in Chicago, and I went to the meetings, and there was just a ton of pretty women and beautiful women, pretty girls. And I wasn't going to sit in there and talk about my issues with food. You know, that just wasn't going to happen. And I stopped going. And I remember people reach out to me and they could see in my face how much pain I was in, right? And there's a solution here, you know, and I heard that. But I guess it wasn't my time, you know, it just was not. And I will say that you know, a little bit later on, I moved to Los Angeles in 2017. And I got here, you know, chasing a solution to autoimmune diagnosis. And what I found was that I can heal myself. But a big part of that healing journey for me was putting the right things in my body, right? And at the time, it was just so hard. And I learned, and I'm learning, I should say, I'm learning that how I can choose the outcome, any outcome that I want. I could be as joyful and happy as I want to be. And if I have a frequency or a vibration that is of kindness, loving kindness, and being gentle to myself, there is no room to react to a trigger. You know, it's kind of like it's like a bulletproof, so to speak. And for me, that took and takes a tremendous amount of work. You know, when I got to OA and I started making meetings, it was right after COVID started, or right around COVID. And, you know, I met a really good guy, and I think he's still my sponsor. I think he's still my sponsor. I haven't spoken to him as often as I should, I'll be honest with you, as I should. But my food issues have stabilized, but that doesn't change or take away the emotional aspect or pieces of this, right? You know, it does not. This is an everyday thing, and it's kind of like when does the off switch come on, right? When do you turn on the off switch? And something that I you know, I recently experienced that I'm going to start leveraging OA to help me with is that my health has improved dramatically, and that's due to taking care of myself. And I'm grateful for that. And I got back into working out in a mindful way. And I, you know, I'm in the wellness business as a breath work. I'm a life coach, and I facilitate breath work, and I teach meditation. And someone wanted to work with me who was a celebrity fitness trainer, you know, a celebrity fitness model, personal trainer, etc. And, you know, we were gonna work together, and I would work with other men, you know, clients. Choices that I'm making that are in alignment with what's best for my body, what's best for me emotionally when it comes to food. And you'll never do this, you'll never be that, you know, if you don't. And that's the same things I heard as a kid. I think we all heard that, right? You know, we're children, we hear these things that aren't even our thoughts. You can't, don't, stop, why would you? And that, you know, kind of lays the foundation to really end up in any program, to be honest with you, you know, food, drugs, alcohol, whatever. And so when I started experiencing this thing that I experienced when I was a kid, like somebody telling me what I should and shouldn't do and what I can't, and you won't, you know, and it was just very triggering and shaming. And one of the things that was most challenging for me was just to let go of that, you know, a relationship and move on and use my voice and stand up for myself. And because what I noticed when I was, you know, back into trying to put a lot of protein in my body.
And excuse me, Darius, you have 5 minutes left.
Right on, right. That I started feeling sick. You know, I started flaring up and triggering some autoimmunity. And I said to myself, no way. And so it's, you know, I'm saying all that because, you know, it's this is a spiritual thing, and it goes way, you know, beyond, for me, it goes way beyond, you know, bottom line list and things that be absolutely no goes and all that stuff. That's very macro and it's very technical. And that kind of triggers and overwhelms me. But I look at it, I really look at how I approach recovery on the whole and how I take care of myself. Making a wrong turn when it comes to food? Do I want to be free of running to sugar or something else when I'm triggered? And the answer for me is yes. So how do I you know, get to that utopia, if you will, of what I want? And I'm learning that it's all about, for me, is when I wake up every morning, I am excited to live this life. I am excited and grateful about everything and everyone I have in my life. I am excited and grateful about the 158 other people that are on this call right now. Right? I had to look at waking up every day. It was like being a little kid and Christmas is the next morning. And when I started doing that, when I started looking at everything from a point of view of excitement and love, even the things I don't like doing, I had to say, I love doing this. You know, my body and mind are saying no, but I had to really force my higher self, the soul, to say, yeah, I really love doing this. And it kind of just fades and melts away. All of those chains, they kind of loosen up a little bit. And that I'm not advocating or saying we don't have to go to OA meeting again. No, not at all. You know, but I'm saying is I had to learn how to love myself. Because, you know, running into the gas station and grabbing three or four different types of sugary, poisonous candy isn't loving myself. You know what I mean? It's not. As far as I'm concerned, for any human walking this planet, putting the stuff in the body is not loving yourself. Right? And that's how I've been, you know, making it along one day at a time. I think another thing that really helped me was that, you know, my education on healing from an autoimmune diagnosis and really understanding the nervous system and lymphatic system, you know, it's a lot of this food that's manufactured, and I'm using the word manufactured in the United States. And so when I'm feeling like a trigger, I have to remind myself that I'm I am loved, I am safe, I am powerful, that I'm meant to have the most amazing, awesome life ever, and that what I want is to be, you know, say this in the rooms, you know, I learned this years ago, is happy, joyous, and free. And if I can wake up every morning, go to bed every night, and like have an honest 10 step about my thinking and all of those things, and wake up and tell myself I'm going to wake up to the most amazing day ever, it usually is. And then kind of it's like a force field, if you will, around all the nonsense and they can be thrown at us in a day. And I also learned that, and I'm learning more and more every day, that a lot of the craziness that may come my way in a day, I create it. No matter how much, you know, sometimes you get somebody will rear end you at the stop sign or the light, right? That happens. But most of the other drama in my life that would trigger me to eat, I created it some way and somehow. And I have to always take a look in the rearview mirror and say, am I loving myself today? Am I surrounded by people that love themselves just as much? Am I surrounded by people that want the absolute best for me in every circumstance in my life? and those answers align to be yes, it's like the our daily, our walk in this world is really, you know, trauma-free, carefree. So I'm so grateful to Mark for asking me to speak today. I am. And I actually appreciate this program and this fellowship, right? Because this thing is, I had an AA sponsor years ago, I'll close with this. He used to say, you know, food is the trickiest addiction. To notice, you know, how heavy-handed I was with sugar and sweets and all that. And but we're living to be in joy. At least I am, you know. I'm living to smile and have fun and laugh. And when I have that mindset, I'm not really in a place where I need to eat something or drink something to make me feel better. So I love all of you. You know, once again, happy 4th of July. I'm grateful to be able to share my experience, and I will be back. Thanks a lot.
I now turn meeting back over to our second speaker, Katie M.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My name's Katie, I'm a compulsive overeater. So good to see you all. Thank you so much for putting this on. Thank you to everybody who did service. Thank you to our first speaker, Darius. It was incredible. I related to so much. And I'm just so, so grateful to be starting the day here and not like going to the grocery store and planning what I'm gonna eat. And I'm gonna bring this because that's what I want really. Like, even though I'm bringing it to share, it's like, I want, you know, something that I'm gonna want to be able to keep the leftovers of, and just all of the mental gymnastics and all of the chatter that used to be associated with this day. And I remember when I first came into program, I was so touched by the way that we do these special holiday meetings by like starting the day off like with recovery, so that like I look at it as building up my suit of armor before heading into the family, before heading into the barbecue, before heading into, you know, whatever tricky situation it might be. It just feels really good to like start with that strong foundation. And I'm just so grateful, you know, that we're still doing this and that there's still like 167 people. Like, that's pretty cool. So, and from all over too. So I'm honored to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope, and, you know, my story with the program and how it's helped me. And you know, I'm honored to hear what everybody else has to say too, because this community, that aspect of it, like the people and the connection, is really what kept me coming back. Because in the beginning, I had such low self-esteem that like I really didn't even, I don't think I fully wanted to get better, but it was the love and the outreach that I experienced from everybody that made me realize I'm worth getting better. I'm worth it. And I have a bright future ahead of me. And I wasn't planning on staying very long, I'll be honest, especially when things got really bad with the food and I was at my heaviest weight and I was miserable and lonely and isolating. Like, I didn't want to be here. And I'm so glad that God brought me to these rooms and showed me that like there is a solution and that there is like a lot of big possibility out there. And that my life doesn't have to be shackled by addiction. And so I wanted to, if you don't mind, read the passage from the big book. Also, this cute little big book cover is a gift from my sponsor. And on the inside, she put, "We're the lucky ones." So really sweet. This is page 25 in the big book of There Is a Solution, chapter 2. There is a solution. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had to come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid out at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had no, of which we had not even dreamed. And the reason why I pulled that quote was A, the rocket visual. I just thought was cute and relevant for 4th of July, just being rocketed into a fourth dimension. And also it's really relevant for how I feel, you know, my life has gotten better. I've been abstinent for 5 years and 8 months from binging. And just being able to see, because in the day-to-day, in the little minutia, sometimes it doesn't feel like any progress has been made, you know, especially on days where the food is calling, that I'm like, the food is still calling after all this time. But then when I look back as to like where I was in November of 2017, it's like, oh my gosh, like my life is completely unrecognizable. Like so many amazing things have happened, gotten a better job that I actually really, really love, with a boss that respects me, and with, you know, coworkers who I work really well with and collaborate with, and they see my value. And, you know, I have an amazing support system in all forms. I have, you know, OA, I have like my yoga people, I have my therapist, my nutritionist, like I have like a squad of support. And that just feels so good to know that I will never fall as hard as I would have before program. And it's not to say that bad things don't happen to me anymore. Like there are absolutely still like unfortunate circumstances that happen. But I try to reframe it to, it's not happening to me, like it's happening for me. And so I also just kind of look at it, as they mentioned, like the spiritual toolkit. I'm just more equipped now to handle things when they come, because before, my only tool was food. My only like coping mechanism was food. And it wasn't even necessarily when bad things would happen. Like it would be, you know, when good things would happen and there was a celebration, like a day like today, that it's like, nothing's wrong. It's just like, I just want to eat. I just want to go to town on the food and check out and just get lost in it. And I wanted to be able to eat with no consequences. I wanted to be able to just eat whatever I wanted and be thin. And that just like, isn't the case, you know, maybe for some people, but like, that's just not my story. So just knowing that, like, I, no matter what life hands me, and, you know, no matter what unfortunate circumstances might happen, like, I know that I have everything that I need, thanks to my higher power and thanks to all of the life lessons that I've learned in this program. Because, you know, we say like, it's about the food, but it's not about the food. And I found that to be true, because the food is what brought me into these rooms, but it really wasn't the problem. Like that was just kind of my like band-aid to like the deeper stuff, which was feeling not enough, the scarcity mindset, insecurity, like all of these things that I just kind of used food as like my medicine for. And it's a tricky one, right? Because like we all need to eat. It's a little bit different than the mothership program, where you just put the plug in the jug and just don't engage with it at all, and you're done. Whereas with us, like we have to engage with the beast, you know, let the tiger out of the cage, as they say, three times a day. And you're presented with opportunities to make choices every single day, three times a day. And, you know, there are times where the food might not be in your control, you know, which like it's never in our control, it's all up to God. But like, you know, a situation like a potluck where, you know, there's food around, and it's like, do I just eat ahead of time? Do I bring something that is abstinent that I know I can eat and just stick with that? Like there's choices, and it's never going to be the same each and every time. And that's the gift that I've been given, is like willingness to invite my higher power in before situations like this, to ask God, show me what your will is for me. Show me what the right next indicated action is. So oftentimes that involves checking in with my sponsor too, like being like, I think I've got this download from my higher power, but just wanted to like run it by you first, especially on days like today. And the accountability factor is also what has helped me tremendously, because before, like my word didn't really mean much. You know, like if I said diet starts Monday, maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. Like it really did. It was like, you know, maybe it would, and it would last like a week. And then after a week, I would just say, F it. And it would just be like, you know, one life to live, YOLO. You know, that was always like my go-to when I just like wanted to eat whatever I wanted and have no consequences. It was just like, I'm not going to waste my whole life, like, you know, depriving myself of what I want to eat, blah, blah, blah. And like, the truth is, there are some foods that I consider yellow light foods that I can engage with in certain circumstances. So like an example of that would be ice cream. I don't go out and buy pints of ice cream, or, you know, gallons of ice cream the way that I used to, and like plow through an entire one in one sitting anymore. But if I'm out with friends and there is like a singular, reasonably sized portion, like a ice cream cone, I can have that and be okay. I can bookend it with my sponsor as long as I'm not going into it with the intention of like, I want to check out or I want to numb these feelings that I'm feeling. If it's just like participating in life and being able to have something and then actually enjoying it, because something that I've heard is that like, if you eat the thing and then feel like shit about it, like, you know, all day, it's actually like worse for your body and your nervous system to be obsessing over how guilty you feel over eating that thing than like the actual like sugar and calorie content of the thing. So I just found that to be really interesting. So just like, if I want to enjoy XYZ, I can have that and be at peace with it, knowing that I have all of the spiritual tools under me to prevent it from spiraling out into a full-on binge. Because I think for in the beginning, I was so afraid to even go there with certain foods that were like my red lights, because I was afraid it was going to trigger like, oh, once I start, I can't stop. And that absolutely was the case in the beginning. You know, as a newcomer, structure and boundaries were really, really good for me. And, you know, they gave me freedom, you know, on the topic of freedom, like having, you know, while restriction or not restriction, but while, you know, structure or a meal plan might feel restrictive or might feel like depriving, it actually gives me a lot of freedom, because then I don't have to think about it. I don't have to do the whole emotional decision making of like, well, what do I eat right now? I'm hungry. I'm already getting hangry. I can't decide what I want, what my body wants. But if I have something already pre-planned and, you know, portioned out, and all I have to do is hit it in the microwave or, you know, toss together a salad, it's like, great. That takes away like that. That gives me so much freedom to use that mind space that I was obsessing over and put it towards something more useful, like being of service or, you know, anything. And I want to talk about service too on days like today, because I've found that especially like when there's family around and like maybe kids or, you know, older relatives, being of service really helps me not obsess over the snack table. So like I'll have whatever food that I eat and then be text my sponsor and be like, you know, either kitchen's closed or, you know, I'm done eating for right now. And then I just look around the room and I'm like, where can I be of service? Is there a kid that needs help? Is there an adult that needs a drink, a beverage? You know, like, is there like something that I can do, you know, tidying up, cleaning up? Like, that's sort of how I distract myself from obsessing over the food. And once I get my mind off of it and I'm doing something else, then, you know, the obsession is lifted for the most part. And like I said, there are some days that the food still calls, and I get to look at that as like, what is God trying to show me? What is the spiritual lesson here? I appreciate my triggers in a weird way because it shows me like where I still have room to grow. And I appreciate when I don't get triggered over something that used to trigger me, because I can recognize that that, you know, shows the progress that I've made. And just like the freedom from the bondage of self, as we also talk about, you know, just thinking that everything is about me when like, it's absolutely not. Like, I really used to walk through life thinking that everyone cared so much about what I was doing and what I was saying and what I was eating, like as if people were like watching me and like what I was eating and stuff. And I've just like learned in this program in the most loving way, like, no one cares. Like, no one really, like, everyone's thinking about themselves and no one's thinking about me. And so I just get to, you know, show up and love myself the way that I want to be loved by other people, and the rest will follow. And I also have found that like integrity and honesty are two like key life things that I've learned in this program, because I used to lie about my food all the time. And I used to be so sneaky with my food, and I used to, you know, get food, you know, out. This is when I had roommates, and binge in my car and like immediately throw the trash out in the outside dumpster so that like I destroyed the evidence so that no one would see what I had done. And like that level of just like living a double life was just exhausting, and it made my life very small. And there really isn't anything that could bring me back to living that way, because that was kind of what brought me into program in the first place, was that the food actually wasn't hitting the way that it used to anymore. And that was kind of scary for me, because it was like, here's this thing that always used to help and like, you know, you know what I'm trying to say, anesthetic. You know what I'm getting at here. It used to help me and then it didn't. And it was like, oh my God, why isn't this thing working anymore? Why do I feel worse? I feel worse than before. And thank God, you know, it was my best friend that got sober in the beverage program was the one that just told me like, hey, there's a program like AA, but for food. And that's like all it took. It was just like this tiny little seed that was planted. And I started coming to meetings and got a sponsor within like the first month. And it didn't necessarily like in that first month of coming to meetings, I remember kind of going back and forth of like, do I really want to do this? Like, this seems like a lot of work. But then like, what's the alternative? Like continuing to just like spiral out and get heavier and, you know, just living this like really sheltered, isolating life. So I'm really grateful that I was gifted the blessing of willingness to be able to just take the next right indicated action, listen to sponsor direction. Working the steps for sure was where I actually saw like real change start to happen in my life. Coming to meetings gave me relief, but working the steps gave me my recovery. And I find it so amazing that these things that the 12 steps and the big book and everything like can be applied to pretty much any addiction and like it still works. Like that's pretty magical to me. And the fact that this thing has been around for so long and there's no like president or like, you know, anyone in charge, like it is all just completely self-supporting and knowing that this program existed a long time before me and will continue to exist a long time after me just gives me such comfort. Like that's the level of consistency that I have been craving my entire life because my childhood was inconsistent and I didn't know what I was going to walk into when I would walk home or when I would walk in the door.
Excuse me, Katie, you have 5 minutes left. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paula. I appreciate your service. And now, you know, knowing I'm going to like hearing people say the serenity prayer, like still to this day, sometimes brings tears to my eyes. Just like, I know exactly what I'm going to get when I come into these rooms. Like, I know that the solution is here. And I know that there's people who really care about me. And it's like, there's no, you know, I remember my sponsor started working with me. It was so bizarre that there was no like payment involved. Like I was just so used to like, I have to give you something in order for you to be nice to me. And it was truly just to benefit like her own recovery and to just, you know, be helpful. And we can only keep what we have if we give it away to others. So yeah, this program has granted me a lot of freedom. There's a lot of beautiful expansion that's happening in my life. And I know that I have to keep program still at the forefront. I've given this visual before, so forgive me if you've heard this, but it was shown to me in like, you know, CCD, like Bible school and when I was little, but I still apply it to this day. If you picture a mason jar and God is the size of a golf ball, and then all the other things in your life, so like friends, your job, boyfriend, you know, whatever, all the things are marbles. If you put the golf ball in first, and then all the marbles and the sand and the smaller pieces after, the lid will close. But if you put all the little guys in first and then God last, like God is an afterthought, it won't close. You won't be able to close it. And I just love the idea of like, if I put program and my spiritual life first, everything else will settle in. And that's why things like my morning routine have become so important to me and so precious. And I protect that because I know that like, if I put that first, all the other stuff on the to-do list will get done eventually. But if I start the day raring to go and I have to like immediately jump on, you know, my email and start, you know, doing work and whatever and overextending myself, and then God is like an afterthought, like, oh yeah, that's right, I didn't do my meditation or my prayer, then that's when things get sticky and it starts to snowball. And when days in a row start to rack up like that, it's like, it's just not great for me. And it's like, I was speaking to a fellow about like, it's funny how I tend to resist. I think it's an addict thing that like, I tend to resist the things that I know to be proven to help me, like going outside. Being outside is where I feel most connected to my higher power. When I am in nature, when I'm at the beach, when I'm, you know, even just going for a walk around my neighborhood, That's when I feel most connected to my higher power. Why is it then that when I'm in like my depression spiral, I cannot get myself to go outside? And that's like, takes nothing, right? Like it doesn't cost any money to just step outside and take a deep breath and get the sun on my face. And yet for whatever reason, I just am like, no, I just want to like roll in bed and, you know, shut the blinds and isolate. And, you know, that's where I get to work on it. That's where I know like, okay, you know, I have like some resistance still. And that's okay, because there's no graduation. I'm never going to like make it. There's never like this pinnacle of nirvana of like, you know, I have a perfect recovery. It's like, that's not ever going to be the case. There's always going to be new lessons to be learned, new challenges to overcome. And in general, I can say that my life is on like an upward trajectory. You know, there might be like some, you know, ups and downs, but like I said, you know, in the beginning of my share, I can absolutely see that my life has gotten better since I started turning my food over to my higher power. And it was difficult for me to really apply this like abstract concept of God, because it's like whatever you want it to be. It's not like, you know, one set thing in this program, to something as finite and concrete as food. It was a difficult reach, like, you know, that gap was difficult to make. But now I just see it as like, you know, when I sit down to eat, I just say like, God, please let this be enough, because that's always been my thing, is just wanting more, 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 more. And so when I just like say like, please let this be enough, that tends to work. That's what's worked for me so far, at least. And I fully, fully acknowledge that things might change down the road. I can't predict the future. I don't know, you know, what God has in store for me, but knowing that for today, this is what's really working and what's really helping, and knowing that I'm helping others through this as well, and being able to show people that like there is a solution, has just been like the biggest gift. It's just, I'm so grateful that I have this thing and that I get to work this program, because so many other amazing things that seemingly have nothing to do with food have happened as a result of working the program. So I'll just say that this past year, I've really—
Oh, that's time, Katie.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you so much. I will wrap up with this. I've really been, meditating on the expression just for today, because before that used to be something that I would tell myself when things were really bad, that it was like, it's just for today, just hang in there, it's just for today, like, you know, it's gonna get better, it's just for today. And now I actually get to apply that for when things are really good in my life and be like, enjoy it, because it's just for today. You just get to enjoy it just for today. And that's been, you know, a really beautiful thing for me. So thank you all so much for listening, and I can't wait to hear your shares.
I now welcome our final speaker, Jeff.
Hi, my name is Jeff. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm 100 pounder, and I'm still working on the golf ball thing, Katie. You're right. You're absolutely right about that. And thank you, Darius and Katie, for those lovely shares. I really appreciated those. Let's see. Let's start by qualifying. If I do not dive in headfirst into a vat of ice cream today, I will have 14 years tomorrow. And in those 14 years, I have lost 140 to 145 pounds. And if I can successfully share my screen, I will prove it to you. Let's see. Can you all see my screen? Yes? No? Okay. So you see there's you got it? Okay. So you see some pictures of me before. We'll just leave it at that. My top weight was 339 pounds, and today I currently weigh 193 or 4 pounds, depending on a variety of factors. And the fact that I told you I just weighed 193 pounds is about as big a miracle as anything else that's happened to me here in these rooms. My abstinence date, as you can surmise by doing the math, is July 5th, which was not a coincidental date. It was the day after July 4th, because I knew I was going to a party on July 4th, and I was going to tie one on, because I was that guy. I was forever tomorrow. My dad called my mom forever tomorrow, because she was always going to start something tomorrow. You know, and, that's a resolution, and resolutions in my experience do not work. There's only one thing that works, and that's action. but I wasn't ready to take action ever on that day. I was always going to do it the next day. And what it was like before, you know, I could bore you with a foodalog. I could tell you how cruel it was being a fat kid in the 60s and 70s. And it was, but you probably, if you experienced it, you know it. And if you didn't experience it, God bless you for not having to have experienced it. I won't bore you with all of that. But what I will tell you is that my needs always came first. My needs, not your needs, not the world's needs, not anybody else's needs, my needs. Often it involved food, but all other needs too. You know, and I tried to bend the world to suit myself as opposed to adjusting myself to fit into the world. Right? I wasn't fitting into very much anyway, so why fit into the world? And that was also characterized, my disease was also characterized by what I would have to call eating in a disturbing way, eating in a way that I would be ashamed for anyone else to see me eat, which of course then involves hiding. Katie talked about it earlier, about hiding the wrappers, about not being able to be seen. And I'll give you one brief story about how bad it was. I would go to a convenience store and buy a bag of miniature donuts, but not one bag. I'd buy two bags of miniature powdered sugar donuts. And I'd get into my car. And a Diet Coke. Did I mention that? And so then I would get into my car and I would eat these little mini donuts. I think they're like 25 in a bag. And I'd get down to like two or three left and say, I can't finish the whole bag. So I would, scrunch that up, literally throw them out my car window, which, not proud of, but that's the truth. And then open up the second bag. Now, I couldn't even finish the first bag because God forbid I should do that. But I'll open up the second bag after almost finishing the first bag, eat almost all of those, then get out of my car and look like I was a cocaine addict with all of the powdered sugar running down my shirt, thinking, and at 300 and something pounds, thinking no one would know I was a compulsive overeater. So that was the depth of the illness that my illness took me to. It also took me to the hospital a lot. I would say in the 3 or 4 years before I found the program, I was in the emergency room somewhere between 6 and 10 times with a variety of fat illnesses, vertigo, panic attacks that I thought were heart attacks, a variety of things. Got to the point where they said, hi, Jeff, when I walked into the emergency room because it was getting that bad. But then July 5th, 2009 came. And but just before that, I had thought about getting a gastric bypass surgery because, it's an easier, softer way. And I went to the hospital and they showed me what I would be able to eat. And I knew I couldn't do that and not go crazy. So I went through the process anyway. And the last thing the doctor said to me, I went and visited the physician. He said, go see my shrink. She'll tell me you're fine. And then we'll do the surgery. And I said, if I'm going to see a shrink, I should find out if I'm fine, not be rubber stamped by somebody for this guy. And so I reached out to a guy I had known. I had briefly been in the fellowship in the 80s, reached out to a guy I had known who was a therapist. And I said, I need to see you professionally. He said, I can't do that, but let's have coffee. So I said, you're going to do for me for free what I'm asking to pay you for. And he said, yes. He said, I'm your friend. I can't see you professionally. I said, you're not my friend. You turn up like a bad penny in my life. Once every 5 years, I find you. And he said, no, let's go out for coffee, because he knew he was going to try to bring me back into the program. And what he said to me was, and these are his words, and no judgment against anyone who did the surgery. His words said, you can mutilate your body and come to OA, or you can come to OA. If it doesn't work, you can go back to the doctor. In 3 months, he'll still be there. He'll take your money. And so I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So I went to Serenity Sunday on July 5th, 2009. I put my hand on the door and I said, God, I don't know if you exist. And if you exist, I don't know if you give a rat's butt about me, because I haven't been very good. I haven't been a very good child. I haven't been a very good citizen of the world. But if you're out there, could you please help me to not compulsively eat today? And I walked into the meeting and I did the meeting and saw some people I knew from back in the day. And I left there and I didn't have to compulsively eat that day. And so the next day I woke up and I said, oh, shit, it worked yesterday. God, if you're out there, could you please help me to not compulsively eat today? And I didn't have to compulsively eat that day. And it's really just that simple. I mean, it's really just that simple. I asked God for help. I got help. Now, I'd like to tell you every morning, the first thing I do when I wake up is say, God, thank you for another day on this side of the planet. And can you please help me to not compulsively eat today? As you can see, I no longer beat myself up for not being a good citizen of this earth because I'm a better citizen of the earth now. But and I do that most mornings. I would say in 14 years, I've missed maybe 100 mornings that I've done that. And then I catch it sometime during the day. And I always ask God for help. But I don't really believe in God. So how did I get to the place where I could say that and believe it, say that and mean it? And the answer is really simple. And I know it seems like a cliche, but I live in Santa Monica, California, right by the ocean. I walked down to the ocean with my 12 and 12 one day, contemplating step two, came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Because I didn't really believe that. And I sat down near the ocean and the waves were coming close and I weighed 340 pounds and didn't want to move. So I asked the waves to stop, because that's how arrogant I was. And the waves didn't stop. And so if you're questioning that, here's what I would suggest to you. I live in Santa Monica. As I said, it is 63 degrees on July 4th. That's way too cold. So I'd like you to make it 20 degrees warmer right now. Now, if you can do that, I'll start praying to you. But until that time, there's a higher power, higher than me, higher than you, because none of us can make it 20 degrees warmer. But if you can, please do. So I knew it was a spiritual program. I embraced trying to find my spiritual path. Now, I was born a Jew. I'm really a Delhi Jew. I know where to get a great corned beef sandwich. I don't know the first thing about Judaism. It's the truth. I didn't really have a lot of time for God in my life because I was too busy trying to rule the world. I began to realize I can't make the grass stop growing, even though I don't want to pay the gardener. You know, I can't, there's so many things I can't do. I can't make you like me or dislike me. Well, I could probably make you dislike me, but that's a whole other story. But I can't make you like me. I can't make you give me that job. I can't make you, put more money in my bank account. You know, there's just so many things that are so far out of my control that I surrendered. You know, I keep a flag in my pencil case here on my desk that says surrender, because I need to remember, I need to surrender every day. I don't have this. Without your help, without God's help, I don't have it. So I need to surrender to that thought, because that is not my natural inclination. So I came and started to do the steps. You know, steps are obviously what this whole thing is about. You know, I admitted I was powerless over food. That's hard, admitting I'm powerless over food. I am different. I am not like other people. I have to admit that. You know, came to believe, turned my life over, did the inventory. You know, that was not always easy, but, you know, I had to do it because it's not about what people think of me. It's about me cleaning up my side of the street. And then I began to realize that, you know, when you get to, you know, 10, 11, and 12, service, right? I need to do service. It's not just about me anymore. It's about what can I do for the world, not what can the world do for me. So, and service doesn't have to be grand service. Roz, we appreciate your service as chair of the intergroup, but we all don't have to be chair of the intergroup. You know, we all don't have to be president of the United States. I can carry packages for someone who can't carry them. I can hold the door for somebody. I can thank them for doing something nice for me. That's all service. And that's something I need to keep doing every day. So I'm in the program and I lose 6 pounds a month for 18 months. And I'm not making that up. It was terribly frustrating, but that was the way God wanted it to be. So that's the way it was. But 6 pounds over 18 months is a lot of weight. And I kind of plateaued about 110, 100, whatever, 115 pounds down. And I was living there. And then I actually began to gain weight in abstinence because I drew up this whole list of foods I wouldn't eat. It was long and storied, but it didn't talk about how I did eat. talk about what I didn't eat. And so mealtime became a time and not a meal, right? 7 o'clock, it's dinner. Anything that's not on that list between 7 and 7:30 is fair game. Now I'm gaining a little bit of weight, not like I used to gain 10, 20 pounds in a month, but I'm gaining a pound or two a month for 2 or 3 months in a row. And I'm going, what am I doing? What am I doing? And I go to a meeting and I hear a guy talking about sober eating, saying it's not just about what I don't eat, but how do I eat? Am I taking the edge off with food 3 times a day? And I had to say, yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. Taking the edge off with food 3 times a day, better than all day, but I'm still not really sober with my food. And what does that mean? That means no unilateral food decisions. That means letting my sponsor be the decision maker. That means, you know, having accountability for my food. That means weighing and measuring, which is something I swore I wouldn't do when I walked into the rooms. But I need to weigh and measure because I need to know what I'm putting into my body. Because otherwise, I'm still a compulsive eater. Yeah, I'm a thinner compulsive overeater. Yeah, I'm a better guy compulsive overeater, but I'm still a compulsive eater. And so I left the warmth and wonder of the sponsorship I had. I had a great sponsor for the sober eating community. And I threw in with those guys and I lost another 35 pounds over the ensuing years to get down to where I am now. I had to go see a nutritionist. The nutritionist said, this is bad news for those of us in our later years, but I said, I eat like a monk. Why aren't I losing weight? And she said, well, you eat very cleanly, but you're eating too much food. I said, too much food? What? I don't count calories, but what could it be, 2,000 calories a day? She said, yeah, I don't need to look at your food. I need to look at your birth certificate. You know, you're getting older. You need less food. You need to shave 300 or 400 calories off of what you're eating if you want to lose weight. Now, what does that mean to a compulsive eater? It doesn't mean much. So I went back to my sponsor because I had to delineate that. I had to get that into specifics because my food is now about specifics. I don't want gray area with my food because there's a gray area. I'm taking advantage of it. If you give me an inch, I'm taking a yard. You know, I mean, I can't have, you know, maybe I'll have this or maybe I'll have that, or, you know, is that the right portion? No, I need to know this. Not that I need to know it. I need to account for it. I need to know what I'm putting into my body. And so I've been eating soberly now for, over 10 years. And it really helps me to maintain a good attitude about my food. And you know, Katie said it before, sometimes I look at my meal and I go, and she said, God, let this be enough. I say, God, let this be enough, you know, because it doesn't look like it will be. But you know what's the amazing thing? So I eat it, I move on, and I'm not hungry. Now I've lost 145 pounds. If I've been hungry maybe 15 times.
Excuse me, Jeff, that's 15 minutes.
Thank you. I've been hungry like 15 times in 15 years, losing 140 pounds. Tell me how that happens. Tell me how that works. Because I can't. I can't tell you how that works. So what's life like now? Well, here's the good news, okay? A, I haven't been to the hospital since I started the program. And when I say I haven't been to the hospital, you know, I go for medical stuff. I've had procedures, but there's been no urgent visits to the hospital. My health is so much better. I exercise. I'm not crazy about it, but I exercise. I eat what I'm supposed to eat. I don't eat what I'm not supposed to eat. I do service. I have sanity, and when I feel myself losing my sanity. Because I am not like other people. Now I go into a restaurant, right? And I'm eating, I go into, there's a burger place not far from my house. And my kids like to go there. So we go sometimes go to this burger place. And I'm eating a 6 ounce beef patty on lettuce. And I look over and there's a guy eating like a bacon cheeseburger with French fries and onion rings and a milkshake, and he's skinny and good looking. I'm like, yeah, I want to look at him and go, you know what I want to say, fuck my life. And then I look at him and I say, he's Ian Lopp. I am not like other people. He's Ian. I'm not. I can't eat the way he eats. I don't know his life. He could have run three marathons that morning. I don't know. You know, it's not, why am I taking my, you know, desire, you know, my, you know, food illness and projecting it onto other people and then having it reflect back to me? I can't afford to do that. I have to realize I'm not like that guy. The idea that I somehow may be has to be smashed, not put aside, not thought about, but smashed. I need a freaking sledgehammer into that idea, because I ain't him and I'm never going to be him. I have a disease. That disease has brought, you know, pain and difficulty into my life. And now that disease brings joy and freedom, right? Today is Independence Day. I have independence from food. I don't need to eat in that disturbing way. You know, when I ate before, I ate against my self-will and against my better interest. Talk about soul sucking. You want to suck some soul out of somebody? Do something against your best will, best interest, and against your will. I don't have to do that anymore. Why? Because I have you guys. I have the tools. I look at this meeting, and even just those few people who have their cameras on, I see people who have immeasurably helped my life for no reason other than the fact that they could. I have you guys to teach me how to do this. I have the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is my instruction manual on life. I have the steps. I have a sponsor. I have fellows. If I feel myself,
minutes left.
Thank you. If I feel myself, you know, sort of edging out of the lane of sanity and serenity, I use those tools. I call people. Phone is big for me. I call people. I tell them what's going on in real time. I don't have to act down on it. I don't have to act down on it. Here's real quickly. I come from a place of service and gratitude now. I have so much gratitude. I can't begin to tell you, but I want to end with this story. I was watching a TV show, and one of the characters was an alcoholic, and he was telling the story, and he said that the guy's walking down the street and he falls, a big sinkhole opens up in front of him and he falls into 20 feet down, and he's yelling up, "Help, help!" And a priest walks by and he looks up, he says, "Father, can you help me?" And he says, "Yes, here's a prayer, say this prayer," and he drops down a prayer. And then another guy, a few minutes past, he's yelling, "Help, help!" A doctor walks by and doctor writes him a prescription for some pain medication and drops him into the hole. But he's still down in the hole. He's yelling, "Help, help." A friend of his walks by and sees him, and he jumps down in the hole. And he says, "Why did you do that for? Now we're both down here." And the friend says, "I've been here before. I know the way out. Let me help. You have shown me the way out." I cannot tell you how much gratitude I have for that. I'm 64 years old. I believe I will live more years than this. I would have been dead by now. You would have been visiting me at my grave today. And today I can live a full, complete, happy life of service and gratitude. And for that, I am eternally grateful. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.